Hitting the mall today? What if you could make that real purchase in virtual reality? From Marketplace in Los Angeles, I'm Andy Euler in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. If you're headed to your Black Friday shopping destination, you're probably prepared for a crowded, frantic, and stressful time. Wouldn't skipping the mall be nice? Chinese retail giant Alibaba recently used virtual reality to allow Chinese shoppers to buy stuff from stores across the world, including Macy's and Target. So how soon are we going to see that here? Marketplace's Jed Kim has that one.
If it looked anything like the promo videos from Alibaba, shopping in a VR Macy's was pretty cool.
Hi, and welcome to Macy's, the largest department store.
It looked like, well, being in a mall. But the ability to browse and buy items all within a headset shows promise. Stephanie Yamas is with Super Data Research. She estimates other retailers will spend $400 million by 2020 building capacity to sell virtually.
It's still not, you know, quite as high as you would think, but the marketplaces themselves are really difficult to develop without all kinds of other infrastructure.
So don't expect our own virtual Black Friday to happen anytime soon. But you could soon feel the impacts of VR on your everyday shopping experiences. Mark Hardy is CEO of InContext Solutions, which has, among other things, built a virtual Walgreens to help stores test different physical layouts.
We're eliminating a lot of labor and a lot of capital expenditures that historically were spent on prototypes and things like that.
You can't escape the virtual future, even without a headset. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Thinking about buying a house? Well, the lending situation might be a little different these days. The average on a 30-year fixed-rate loan is up above 4%. That's the highest it's been in more than a year. Rates have climbed since the election a couple of weeks ago. Nicholas Retsinas, a Harvard professor who specializes in real estate, is here to tell us what's going on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So what's the cause for this rise?
Hard to say. Generally speaking, interest rates go up when investors think inflation is on the horizon. And I think the concern after the election was all the talk about new spending programs and tax cuts gave people pause that, in fact, inflation may be returning.
So 0.5% doesn't sound like a whole lot, but for a home buyer, that could translate into quite a bit of money every month, right?
Could be over $50 a month, the difference between what interest rates were back at election day and what they are today.
So what's your sense? Will this cause people maybe to hold off on buying or refinancing their mortgage? Is it going to have a big effect, do you think?
Well, in the near term, buyers have come to the conclusion that interest rates may be going up, so they're rushing to buy. So in the short term, applications to buy may be up. Refinancing is another story. It changes dramatically the number of people who would benefit from refinancing with the increase in interest rates.
And it's likely that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates a tick next month and perhaps even more next year. What does all this mean for the housing market generally?
Well, there's no direct correlation between what the Fed does, but clearly they're contributing to a rising interest rate economy. So it will affect mortgage rates over the long term. What this means is that over the long term, people will buy less houses because houses will be more expensive. Their purchasing power of the mortgage will go down significantly. Refinancing will go down, which means there will be less disposable income for people to spend. It will make for a continuing sluggish housing market.
Nicholas Retsinas with Harvard Business School. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Codebreaker is back with a brand new season. This time around, a new question. Can it save us? We are asking this simple question about a different kind of technology every single week. You can subscribe now on iTunes.
Coca-Cola, the quintessential American soft drink, is making a big bet on Africa. As consumption of their kind of beverages declines here in the U.S., the Atlanta-based company sees Africa as a major growth market. Across the continent, the company is also rolling out an experiment in social entrepreneurship. It's kind of a community center in a box and also happens to sell Coke products. So how much of this effort is benevolence and how much is business? From Georgia Public Broadcasting, Bradley George reports.
They're called eco-centers. The first four letters are Coke, spelled backward. And they're popping up from the plains of Tanzania to the coast of Ghana. A video produced by the company shows drummers, musicians, and dancers at the opening of an eco-center in Rwanda. President Paul Kagame, Coke CEO Mutar Kent, and the Reverend Jesse Jackson cut the ribbon. Eco-centers look like concession stands, painted in the red and white of the Coke logo. Each unit sells consumer goods, including Coca-Cola and other beverages the company produces. But Coke says eco-centers are meant to be community gathering spots. This one in Rwanda is set up next to a soccer field. Most offer water filtration systems and solar-powered outlets for charging cell phones.
You have to make sure that the tension between what you want to do for your business and the positive aspect of what you want to do for the community is really working.
Bia Perez is Coke's chief sustainability officer.
And one can't be a trade-off for the other.
The company won't say how much it's spending on eco-centers, but its rollout comes as Coke makes major investments in Africa, $17 billion by 2020. Coca-Cola is betting the continent's burgeoning middle class may develop a thirst for its beverages.
This is a way to get rooted in the community and get the community to support Coca-Cola's operations, and other multinationals have been doing this as well.
West Virginia University professor Usha Haley studies how big companies use social entrepreneurship in emerging markets. She says there's not a strong correlation between those investments and corporate profits. But Haley says corporate interests usually come first, and it's not always clear whether governments in these countries will be good watchdogs.
The problem is, what happens when the media spotlight is removed from these eco-centers? Who's running them? Who's making money off them?
Coca-Cola says it's committed to eco-centers for the long term. Its goal is to open more than 160 in Africa by the end of the year. It's expanded the project to Vietnam and plans to take it to other parts of the developing world in the coming years. In Atlanta, I'm Bradley George for Marketplace.
You heard about virtual reality shopping a bit earlier, and lots of people are already doing their shopping on the internet and getting stuff delivered to their homes. Online shopping by folks here in the U.S. was up above $1 billion as of last night, according to Adobe Digital Index. That's up more than 10% from last year. While you're shopping, check out all of our stories at marketplace.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.